Blog Talk Radio.
I release all disappointment from my mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional body. 'Cause I know that spirit guides me, and love lives inside me. That's why today I take life as it comes.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another Monday to Higher Consciousness. This is your host and creator, Professor Jamila Franklin, and I am so honored to be with you this evening. If you're in your car, if you're in your living room, your kitchen, outdoors, jogging, whatever, I'm just really happy to be with you. If you're listening to the recorded version of this, thank you so very, very much. And please, please share the program with others. Even if you're not able to listen to the live shows, you can always click on the link and it will give you all of the shows that we have done. I have been on the air since 2012, and I took a hiatus in 2019 for a year and a half. So I have been on the air prior to taking a hiatus 7 years, and now I'm back on starting in January. So we have a completely new a different lineup of different topics. Higher Consciousness is not a religious program. It is spiritual and metaphysical. So we look at things from a metaphysical and enlightened perspective. And for those of you who would like to know more about my background, you can contact me via Oyende Enterprises, O-Y-I-N-D-E, Enterprises, ENTERPRSES.com, or just Google me, Professor Jamila, JAMELA Franklin, and there are about 3 pages, I think, that will come up. And I'm going to do one of my infomercials, too, to give you more information. But I am a college professor, certified Reiki master, certified aromatherapist, certified metaphysician, and an award-winning author, motivational speaker, life coach, holistic therapist, and I teach classes in holistic areas to holistic medicine. So I've been around for a number of years, and I have a very, very wonderful practice, holistic practice, in helping people deal with PTSD, which is really an interesting topic, and I'm going to, in March, really devote a lot of time to mental health issues because the modality that I use, which is a variation of the emotion code, really, really helps people deal with the stress that we've encountered. We've had 4 years of unrelenting attack on our psyche, regardless of your race. It's been brutal. Brutal, brutal, brutal. And people are really having PTSD. African Americans are having post-traumatic slave disorder as well as stress disorder. And other people are having stress disorders. We're seeing numbers really spike in terms of suicide and in terms of depression because of what's been going on in this country. And so I am here to help those of you who would like to get to the bottom of the issues, and I do my work virtually because of COVID, but it's just as effective. So you can go to my website, or you can call me at 770-882-7347. Again, the business number is 770-882-7347, and you can call me if you're interested more in my services after you have looked at the website, okay? So just wanted to talk about that first. to let you know that I am not a novice. I've been around for over 30 years, and I am so committed to helping people make change in their lives. So that's my service to humanity, and that's my commitment. Okay, so I look forward to hearing from you, and I look forward to having you join me each Monday, and you're telling your friends and family and other people whom you know. Tonight we're going to talk about two great legends. As you know, recently, Mary Wilson, one of the founding members of the Supremes, died at the age of 76, and also Leon Spinks died the day before Mary Wilson. And for those of you who may not know who he is or remember who he was, he was the person who defeated Muhammad Ali. But then Ali had another rematch with him, and he defeated him. So anyway, we're going to go over both of those figures tonight, because for quote-unquote Black History Month, a lot of times people keep repeating the same names. My goal this year is to talk about people that you may have heard of, but only slightly, or may never have heard of, because they have been buried in history. So my goal is to make sure that you become familiar with them. So now I'm going to first talk about the late Leon Spinks. His history is really very sad, and I'm reading something that I saw online and want to talk a little bit about that. Leon Spinks, who shocked the boxing world with his 1978 defeat of Muhammad Ali to claim the heavyweight championship, died Friday in Henderson, Nevada. He was 67 years old. Mary Wilson also died in Henderson, Nevada. His death was announced by the public relations firm PR. In recent years, Spinks had battled prostate cancer and other forms of cancer, and he also was suffering from dementia. I just found out today. On the night that he toppled Ali, Spinks was the very definition of an underdog. He was unranked, and until that bout, had only fought professionally 7 other times. Not once had he gone beyond 10 rounds. Spinks was such a long shot that most sports books refused to even take bets on the fight. But at 24 years old, Spinks was young and hungry. Ali, at 36, was past the prime of his career. They brawled for 15 punishing rounds before a crowd of 5,300 in the pavilion at the Las Vegas Hilton. Ali, weighing in at 224 pounds, used a rope-a-dope strategy designed to tire his opponent out. Spinks, at 197 pounds, was more energetic and took an early advantage with jab after jab to Ali's face. The champ would battle back in the later rounds of the fight. He forced Spinks to the ropes, slammed him in the jaw, landed a hook to his head, and then knocked him again with a right to the chin. Spinks later recalled the moment in an interview with Sports Illustrated, saying it brought him back to a moment in his childhood when his father, who would often beat him, told him he would never amount to anything. My dad had gone around and told people I would never be anything, end quote, Spinks said, quote, it hurt me. I've never forgotten it. I made up my mind that I was going to be somebody in this world, that whatever price I had to pay, I was going to succeed at something, end quote. By the end of the night, Ali was bruised and bloodied. The judges awarded Spinks a victory by split decision. I recall thinking, quote, that kid is a tough SOB, Ali said after the fight. Spinks, with a dose of humility, said of the man he grew up idolizing, quote, he's still the greatest. I'm just the latest, end quote. Spinks rose to the title from childhood and poverty. He was born on July 11, 1953, in St. Louis, the oldest of 7 children. He took up boxing at a young age and then dropped out of high school his junior year and joined the Marines, where he took part in their boxing program and famously lost his front teeth. In 1976, he was fighting for Team USA at the Montreal Olympics, where he won gold in the light heavyweight division. Less than 2 years later, Spinks would find himself at the top of the boxing world, but his reign as heavyweight champion would not last long. In September 1978, Ali would reclaim his title from Spinks in front of a crowd of some 63,000 at the Superdome in New Orleans. Spinks' career in boxing never fully recovered. By 1981, he had developed a reputation as a fighter who liked to train easy and party hard. In June that year, he challenged Larry Holmes for the World Boxing Council heavyweight crown, but lost in the third round. Spinks' last fight came in 1995. He lost in the eighth round to Fred Hoop. He ended his career with a record of 26 victories, 17 defeats, and 3 draws. Outside of the ring, much of his life became a struggle. Spinks lost the money he had made as a boxer, and by 2005, he was living in Columbus, Nebraska, where he unloaded trucks and worked as a custodian at the YMCA to help make ends meet. Spinks married 3 times and was the father to 3 sons, all of whom became boxers. One son, Corey, would become a welterweight champion. Another son, Leon Calvin, won 2 professional matches before he was shot to death in 1990 at the age of 19. Leon Spinks' survivors include his wife, Brenda Glure Spinks, sons Daryl and Corey, brother Michael Spinks, and other siblings, and grandson, Leon Spinks III, who also became a professional boxer. So I'm going to give you some more information about him. Okay, about his illness is really. Fame came too soon for Leon Spinks in his boxing career, and now it appears his death would be premature. This was written before he died. The 66-year-old retired heavyweight boxing champion was recently reported to be in increasingly failing health following a cancer diagnosis. Although he reached the peak of his profession, Leon Spinks' stay at the top was brief. His career was ruined by being rushed up the rankings too soon after the storybook ending to his amateur career in a money grab that turned out to be penny wise and pound foolish. Spinks was a rapidly improving fighter in the early 20s. He beat future champion Michael Doakes for his first AAU title and captured a bronze medal as a light heavyweight at the 1974 World Championship. Spinks then scored silver the following year at the Pan American Games and closed out his amateur career at the 1976 Montreal Olympics by winning a gold medal with a U.S. team that included Spinks' champion brother, Michael, and future all-time great, Ray Leonard. Leon Spinks' victory in Montreal as a 23-year-old U.S. Marine with a gap-tooth smile made for a compelling story for boxing fans to follow, setting up Neon Leon for a high-profile start to his pro career. He made his debut the following January with a 5th-round knockout and would fight 6 more times before the year was over inexplicably. He was then granted a February 1978 bout against Muhammad Ali for the World Heavyweight Championship. For perspective's sake, Marvin Hagler was the undisputed middleweight champion of the world for more than 6 years, but had to fight 49 times before that, from 1973 to 1979, to get a crack at one of the major title belts. Before Buster Douglas stunned Mike Tyson, Leon Spinks' victory over Muhammad Ali by split decision on February 15th was considered the biggest surprise ever in a heavyweight championship bout. It earned Spinks $320,000 and the title of undisputed champ. The glory did not last, although Spinks would earn $3 million for the rematch exactly 7 months later. Ali won back the championship by unanimous decision. It would be the beginning of a horrendous slide that would result in Spinks going 19-17-2 over his final 38 bouts, including losses and both his shots at major titles. Spinks, who was arrested on a cocaine possession charge shortly after beating Ali, was the victim of bad advice almost from the start of his pro career. He was rushed into the big early paydays after beating a short list of carefully selected and lightly regarded opponents. And then he was never trained in what it would take to compete against competent heavyweights. A 1-8-1 stretch from 1986 to 1988 that began with the loss to Dwight Muhammad Kwiwi for the WBA Cruiserweight Championship sent Spinks into retirement the first time, but he returned to the ring in 1991. He was done for good by the end of 1995. Already suffering from dementia, Leon Spinks was diagnosed with prostate cancer in June 2019, and the disease spread to his bones. Spinks was fed and administered some of his medicine with a feeding tube. U.S. Today reported that the disease was terminal and that his weight had dropped from 274 pounds to 190 pounds. With the help of his third wife, Spinks held private autograph sessions in recent years to cover some of his medical costs. The Spinks family, including brother Michael, had also been lending aid to assist him. So I just wanted to read the information about Leon Spinks first before going into talking about Mary Wilson, because a lot of people, including myself, really didn't know about Leon Spinks in terms of all the tragedies that he had experienced. And it's really, 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 really unfortunate. Really unfortunate, really unfortunate. So I just wanted to share that so we can talk about that and discuss it if you want to go into it, because I think it's really important. Because people have very little information about him. And it was just really tragic. I had no idea that he was suffering from dementia. Had no idea. So this show is being recorded, so you can also send it to others if you would like. Now I'm going to go over to talk about the late, great Mary Wilson, who died also in Henderson, Nevada. Mary Wilson, one of the co-founders of the Supremes, died Monday at the age of 76, her publicist announced. Wilson passed away suddenly at her Henderson, Nevada home, the singer's longtime friend and publicist, Jay Schwartz, said in a statement. No cause of death was given. Wilson was a trendsetter who broke down social, racial, and gender barriers, Schwartz said in his statement. Wilson was born March 6, 1944, in Greenville, Mississippi. Not long after her birth, her parents headed to St. Louis and then Chicago for better opportunities, but separated soon after. As a three-year-old, Wilson was sent to Detroit to live with her aunt and uncle. As she told the Wall Street Journal last May, she believed that they were her biological parents for most of her childhood until her mother arrived in Detroit when she was 10. She lived in the Brewster Douglas Projects, where she met fellow singers, Diana Ross. Diana's real name is Diane. She changed it to Diana. But anyway, Diana Ross, Florence Ballard, and Betty McGlown. By the time she was 15, they had become a group called the Primettes. Ross coaxed her former neighbor, Smokey Robinson, to introduce them to hitmaker Berry Gordy and his Motown label. But Gordy thought that they were too young to sign. The teenagers refused to let that stop them. They hung around his Hitsville, USA studio until he let them appear on other people's records, doing hand claps and backing vocals. With singer Barbara Martin replacing McGlown, they finally signed with Gordy's Motown label as the Supremes in 1961. When Martin departed in 1962, the group carried on as a trio, releasing its debut album, Meet the Supremes, in December of that year. In 1967, Gordy replaced Ballard with Cindy Birdsong and renamed the group Diana Ross and the Supremes. 3 years later, Ross left for a solo career, and the group once again became the Supremes, with singer Gene Terrell added to the lineup, leaving Mary Wilson as the lone original member. The group achieved unprecedented success with Motown Records in the 1960s, producing 12 number one hits, including Where Did Our Love Go?, Baby Love, and Stop, and The Name of Love. In 2006, Wilson explained to NPR's News and Notes that in 2001, she had gone back to school to get an associate's degree after her long and stellar career in the music industry. Quote, I recall being 13 or 16 years old, she said, and signing our first contract, recording contract. Well, I didn't know what the heck was on that contract. That's why I went back to college, because I realized that there was so much that we, the Supremes, had given away because we didn't know how to read those contracts. I mean, we could read. We graduated from high school and all that, but the understanding was not there. End quote. In the 2000s, Wilson was an instrumental advocate for the Truth in Music Advertising Act, which is now law in at least 35 states. The legislation ensures that a name of a famed legacy musical group like the Supremes cannot be used by a group of performers unless it includes at least one member of the original act. Wilson was very proud of her activism, as she told News and Notes. One of the biggest jokes has been, she stated, and unfortunately it's at the cost of some famous people, that on any given night you can probably see a Drifter, which is the name of an RV group, a Coaster, another name of an RV group, a Platter group in different cities, states, countries, and they have no affiliation with their original recording members, end quote. Quote, we wanted to make the public aware that they are being defrauded, and also that it's taken away the livelihood of some of the groups who are, you know, a lot older, end quote. She continued, her goal, she explained, was to prevent artists in their twilight years to have to see their legacies, the history that they've made, being destroyed, end quote. Berry Gordy said in a statement to NPR, quote, "I was always proud of Mary. She was quite a star in her own right, and over the years continued to work hard to boost the legacy of the Supremes. Mary Wilson was extremely special to me. She was a trailblazer, a diva, and would be deeply missed." Okay, so that's one thing. I'm going to read another that speaks more specifically about her, her biography. Mary Wilson, a singer, a best-selling author, motivational speaker, businesswoman, former U.S. cultural ambassador, mother, and grandmother. At 76, the legendary Mary Wilson continued to make great strides on her inevitable journey through life. With no sign of slowing down, Miss Wilson released her fourth book, Supreme Glamour, in 2019. This fabulous coffee table book showcases the gowns the Supremes were known for over the decades and delves into more history of the most successful female recording group of all time. Supreme Glamour is now available wherever books are sold. In 2019, Mary was honored at the Paley Center for Media in Beverly Hills, celebrating her work in music and her influence on young African Americans and entertainment. Dancing with the Stars proved to be an exciting opportunity for Miss Wilson in 2019, where she showed America that she still had Carly Atkins' choreography down pat. A few of her fellow castmates included Allie Brooke, Sailor Brinkley Cook, Caramel Brown, and James Vanderbeek. In 2020, NNPA, Black Press USA, presented Miss Wilson with their Trailblazer Award to honor her life and career for their Black Music Appreciation Month celebration. Miss Wilson has worked behind the scenes for years on many legislative initiatives aimed at modernizing copyright laws to protect the artists whose rights were not being adequately protected. 2018 marked an important step forward for Mary's fight to have the Music Modernization Act, MMA, passed. Her vision came to fruition when the United States legislation signed the act into law on October 11, 2018. The act aims to modernize copyright-related issues for new music and audio recordings due to new forms of technology like digital streaming, which did not protect music recorded before February 15, 1972. Her advocacy for this act lies with herself and other legacy artists claiming fair compensation when their songs are played on digital radio stations. Okay, so now I'm giving you the background of both the late great Mary Wilson and Leon Spinks. I'm going to talk about notable people of African descent throughout the diaspora, throughout the year, because what happens is that everybody tried to crowd in all the information about African Americans in February. We were not all born in February. We don't all die in February. And we don't just make our achievements in the month of February. So February is not going to be the only month in which you hear me talk about these notable and important figures. But I was going to do a different show tonight, but because of the transition, because I don't use the word death, because they're just transitioning to another existence. They're not, my belief is you never die. You're never born and you never die. It's infinity. You just come back in different forms. So anyway, I had originally thought that I was going to talk about some other unsung heroes, but my thing is I desire to honor those people who have contributed to African American history once they transition. So the people that I was going to mention, I will probably mention next week unless some other major event appears, and then I would just make other arrangements and discuss it later. So that's the thing about having my own show. I can change my topic at will because I'm the producer. I own my show. I own all the rights to my show. So I can do that. And when you're working for someone else, you can't do that. You have to follow their script, which is really unfortunate. However, if anyone would like to contribute and call in, the number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, the call-in number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Tonight I'm talking about the late, great Mary Wilson, who was one of the co-founders of the group The Supremes, and I also shared the information about the late Leon Spinks, who defeated Muhammad Ali back in the 70s, and then Muhammad Ali came back 7 months later and defeated him. And Leon Spinks had a really, really sad decline because he was suffering from a lot of cancers, prostate cancer among one of the cancers, and he was suffering from dementia, and he had just basically, his weight had just had decreased so significantly in his final years of his demise. So even though he made a lot of money, he was basically living in poverty when he died, and he had to resort to being a custodian. And it just really troubles me when I see people exploit those of us who are people of color and or women, because that happens a lot, especially with those who were in the field of entertainment or in the field of sports prior to the 80s. They were exploited tremendously. A lot of them ended up in poverty, you know, if they were writers or whatever. Now, the lawyers made a lot of money, and they exploited them, and that's really unfortunate. And what Mary Wilson said is that they were literate. They could read, but they couldn't understand the legal terminology in the contracts that they were signing. So they ended up signing away a lot of their rights. So it's imperative. It's interesting because this country does not value teachers. Teachers are critical because if you have children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, whatever, it's imperative that they understand how to read. I know people who don't like reading, but let me tell you, young people who are listening, please overcome that fear. Because what you don't understand, when you're signing a contract, those people are having you sign away your rights. And this, and you could be streetwise and all that, because a lot of people, young people, are very astute when it comes to the street culture. But when you're dealing with these lawyers and you're signing these contracts as up-and-coming rap stars or actors or people are making your books or whatever, unless you own your product, like I own all of my products. I publish my own books. I own my own radio station. I own all my products. No one is my boss except the creator. I have that kind of relationship. So I own everything. So unless you have that kind of business reality, even with that business reality, you must understand the legal terminology. Do not leave it to your own understanding. Because even if you're a college graduate or whatever, get someone who understands contract law. Because it's critical. These, like Mary Wilson, and I'm so thankful to her. She, in code, I mean, to break it down to you, what she was doing is she was basically saying you cannot sample their music or do any of that without their permission. And a lot of people have been sampling people's music over the years, particularly white artists have sampled black music and not have paid them for it. And so they don't get royalties for it because they hadn't paid them for it. That's one of the things that I so admire Michael Jackson for. Michael Jackson was an astute businessman, and that's why they tried to destroy his reputation and make disparaging remarks about him. The same thing with Prince. Astute businessmen. And as far as I'm concerned, they killed both of them. So, because they were not supposed to be astute and know how to own their own products. And both of them owned their own products. Michael Jackson not only owned his own products, he bought the Beatles collection from Paul McCartney, one of those. But anyway, he bought that collection, and Paul was very upset because he thought, well, yeah, we're friends. Michael said, yeah, we're friends, but that has nothing to do with business. So the thing is that when you enter these business relationships, people think because you're melanated that you are not business, you don't have the business savvy, because a lot of young people and older people don't. They're so eager and hungry to get out there in front of the public, to have their music heard, to have their books out there, and especially now with this social media thing. They're just hungry for the likes and the numbers. Let me tell you something. The numbers that you get does not mean that it's quality programming, or that the person with the high numbers is producing something that would be of value. And people are now confusing the two. They look at the numbers and they think that this person is a person who has a quality product like the Supremes. No, it doesn't mean that. It just means that they know how to speak the language to the people to pull them in so that they can buy their product. And I don't have an issue with that. But if you're an artist who is doing that or not doing that, make sure, because when you start bringing in large numbers, the recording companies and the book publishing companies, if you're putting out a book, they're going to start knocking on your door. Because see, now you've proven that you are a hot commodity. You have now proven to them that you can make money. That's the same thing that happened with Tyler Perry when he was doing things on his own budget and low-key or whatever. Hollywood didn't pay any attention to him. But as he became a person who was drawing in the money and getting money, then they became aware of who he was and they became very interested in him. But what he did like Oprah. He decided that he would own his own product. And he has his own studio. And Oprah sold her network. A studio is different than a network. The network means she was like an NBC and ABC, so she now only owns 5%. She sold 95% back to Disney. And I think she did it because she felt that her network wasn't making the money that she had thought it would be making at this point. And it was a business decision. Oprah is not naive at all. So she did that because of business. But we don't have a network anymore, to my knowledge. We don't have a network. But I think Aspire, because I don't have cable. I don't have television like I've told all of you. I don't believe in that. I believe in just selecting what I desire to see via the Internet. I don't want them telling me what I should look at. However, I think Oprah was the only person who had a black-owned network. So I may be I am going to check that out. But anyway, with Mary Wilson, what Mary Wilson did, unlike with Leon Sphinx, Mary Wilson got to the point to where she wanted to own all of the things connected to her through regarding the Supremes. And if they played any music or did anything, any sampling, she would get royalties from that. Now, that's very important because royalties mean that you don't have to keep working if you desire not to. But then she became multifaceted. Became very involved in other areas. Leon Sphinx, unfortunately, did not. And his life was just so tragic. Because a lot of people know about Michael Sphinx. I think Michael Sphinx, I haven't really followed his career. But I think he was more astute than his brother. And people really exploit you when you don't know and when you don't read. So for people who detest reading, please get over that and start and just start reading, because by your reading, you become very, very astute. And a friend of mine just sent me something which is true, and I didn't know this until about 2 or 3 years ago. John Johnson, who was the publisher of Ebony and Jet magazine, was a phenomenal businessman. And he was so sharp that Michael Jackson used him as his advisor. And Michael trusted him. Whenever, even when he made this deal regarding the Beatles, he brought John Johnson in on it. He never made a decision without consulting John Johnson. Now, John Johnson was not known to most of the people as being a financial advisor. They just knew him as a publisher of Jet Magazine and of Ebony Magazine, and then his wife, Eunice Johnson, was the one who founded the Ebony Fashion Fair. So they were known basically as quasi-socialites. But the man was brilliant, and Michael trusted him because he knew John Johnson had impeccable insight and foresight regarding business, and he could trust him. So he didn't turn his business affairs over to white lawyers like most of the people did, like Spinks and some other people did. And that's how a lot of people have been exploited, because they didn't know any differently. And then the unfortunately, people had been trained, and still are, that Jewish lawyers are the best lawyers, and they are phenomenal lawyers. But there are black lawyers and black financial advisors who are just as good, if not better. But they've been conditioned to look outside of themselves and not trust their inner wisdom and not trust people who look like them. And as a result, they got exploited. And there were people who looked like them as well, who exploited them as well. So I'm not saying all black entertainers who have used black lawyers or black financial advisors were not exploited. That is not the case. However, a lot of them who looked like them had their best interests at heart. Not all, but quite a few. And most of the ones who did not look like them did not have their best interests at heart. And when people have gone over the books, they have seen how they have stolen monies from them and they didn't receive royalties. And one of the cases was Frankie Lyman, I think that's just his name, in the 50s. They have a movie about that, how their manager just ripped them completely off, and the group off, and he died a tragic death. So, Mary Wilson, and Mary Wilson to me was the most glamorous of the Supremes. Diana Ross was pushed forward. We know why, because of her relationship with Berry Gordy. You know, she was having an affair with Berry Gordy. Her daughter Rhonda is his child. Diana Ross has made that public. I think she made it public about 10 years ago. So it's not gossip. It's fact that she was having an affair with him, and Rhonda is the outcome of that affair. So there's no good or bad, right or wrong. It just is what it is. So Berry Gordy pushed Diana Ross out front, but Diana Ross didn't have the best voice. Florence Ballard had the best voice, but Florence was someone that they couldn't control. So they had to get rid of Florence. They said, well, she left due to illness. No, they kicked Florence out. So and Florence was one who was very vocal and would stand up to Berry Gordy and to anyone whom she felt was trying to manipulate them and was not acting in their best interest. So they got rid of her. But Mary was the most glamorous out of the group. And when you look at the videos, I think she was just gorgeous, just like Cicely Tyson. Mary, to me, was just the most gorgeous out of the three. So, but she was pushed to the background because of the politics with Diana Ross. And Diana Ross, I think, is an astute businesswoman. And she sees the opportunity. You know, if you're having an affair with the record owner, record label owner, of course you're going to get perks. And so what happened is that when Diana Ross left the group, Mary kept the group going. Like I mentioned, Jean Terrell became one of the singers, became like the lead singer. And then they brought Cindy Birdsong in to replace Florence. And then they had several variations, but anything with the word Supremes, Mary was definitely involved with it, and they could not call themselves, any group could not call itself, any spinoff could not call itself the Supremes, because it would be in violation, because Mary had basically trademarked or copyrighted or whatever with that name. So she was very astute in terms of that. And even when Diana Ross tried to start, I think she tried to come up with a group using the name Supremes. I think that's what happened, but she was stopped. She couldn't even do it. So Mary protected the legacy of the Supremes. Now, if anyone would like to join in, feel free. We have 15 minutes left. The number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, the number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. And for those of you who are listening, please tell your children about these unsung forgotten heroes. They know about Harriet Tubman, who is, she's my icon. They know about Dr. King. They know about Malcolm X. They know about, they don't really know about Fannie Lou Hamer, but they know about some of these people that keep coming up, Coretta Scott King and whatever. But very few people really know about Mary Wilson or Leon Spinks and other people that I'm going to talk about in the upcoming weeks. They may have heard of them, but in most cases, people have not even heard of them. So we really need to know the fullness of African-American history, of our history if you're African-American. And if you're not African-American, of American history, this is part of the American fabric. And we need to definitely have everyone, regardless of so-called race, know. Okay? 2920, greetings.
Greetings. How are you?
Greetings, Alice. How are you?
I am magnificent. Thank you so much. I did not know that about Mary Wales. And I thank
Mary
her
Wilson,
because as
Mary
an artist,
Wilson.
I'm sorry, yeah. Mary Wilson.
Because there is a Mary Wales.
Yeah, absolutely. My God. It did not. My God. Mary Wilson, I did not know that she made that possible. As an artist, when I went to copyright my material, it was very new because it was a sound recording. So I couldn't do the old copywriting. And I did not know that she had a lot to do with that.
Yes.
So I thank you for that information because it's very different. And even now, sound recordings are, you know, they're different forms. You know, there were MP3s and then there were discs and then there. And I think even when I submitted mine was on a tape, you know, a magnetic tape. And I'm not even sure if it's still valid. You know what I'm saying? I just need to check because I have a CD out there. And I'm not sure if it's protected because I heard I got a communique from Singapore asking me about my music. Yeah, and I
congratulations.
Don't know what happened. Well, this was long ago, and they were asking me about the copyrights to it, and I didn't check into it. This was just maybe about eight or nine years ago, and I didn't even check into it. So, but that's okay because it's my music, and if anybody listens to it, I'm fine.
But the thing about it is, if they try to sample your music and all that, they have to pay you. That's the thing, from my understanding and reading what she had done, is to make sure that people would receive the royalties, because people are just sampling our music, not even acknowledging. If like, you know, I've been around for a couple of decades, so I can remember the music. But the young people don't know who the original artists were. They're just singing and buying the music. And the original black artists wouldn't get a penny of that. So she's like, no.
And when they enacted that, I remember you at before they said you could only sample a certain number of bars of the music. You could not sample the whole thing. So yeah, that was good. And the information about Leon Spinks, I didn't know very much about him either. So thank you for this, and thank you for prompting young people that have some type of, they feel some type of way, as they say, or they have an aversion to reading, to Get over it, guys.
Yes.
You have got to. Reading is, knowledge is power, and reading will give you that knowledge. So
yes.
Get over it. And
please,
read,
and that's
read,
so,
read.
Alice, that breaks my heart, because I've heard people say, I don't like to read, or I can't read. And I'm saying to them, you have to know what they're saying, even if you have your own business. And some of them have their own little businesses and street business. But
right.
Baby, eventually, you're going to come into a place where there's going to be a contract. And if you don't understand
right.
the language, and you don't understand, the street knowledge is nothing when you're coming up against those lawyers, those white lawyers and corporations. That
right.
They would chew you up. They would
yep.
chew you up and spit you out. And that's what they've
and
done,
you know,
to people in sports and whatever. They just exploited them because they couldn't read. They could not read.
And you know what? That as a former educator, you know, a retired educator, I know where that lack of love of reading, I know how it starts. It starts very, very early. Number one, if no one reads to them, if they don't see anyone in the home reading. And then when we used to teach reading back in, I want to say the early 70s, and it was the round robin, they finally did away with that. And it made those who were not as proficient in reading embarrassed when it was their turn. And a lot of that stems from early childhood background with not being proficient in reading and feeling, you know, not feeling dumb, you know, because I've seen the look on the kids' faces. And somehow it just, they grew up and just didn't like it and never, some got over it, some realized, you know, I can read. And I used to push my kids. I said, it takes practice. So I would encourage anyone that feels like they don't like reading. It's not that you don't like it. It's just that you're not as proficient as you would like to be. So don't give up. Keep working at it. Anything you do over and over, just like a muscle, to get stronger.
Yes, and I would not like anyone, regardless of so-called race or age or whatever, don't limit your opportunities. If you can't read, you're limiting your opportunities. Because when
Absolutely.
Something comes to you, even if you're a business person, if it comes to you, as this, everything that comes to you is going to be in the form of something written. And another thing
right.
that I've seen people do now in education, they're not requiring children to know how to write in cursive. And I said, that's the kiss of death. Because if you can't write in cursive, they can't even read cursive handwriting. They can't read
do
it.
You
they
know,
don't know,
do
they don't
you
know
why they stopped that? I remember I was teaching middle school, must have been 20 years ago. And I started writing, and I had a sixth grade class, and I started writing in cursive on the board the first day, and they started screaming, I can't read that. And I was like, what? And so I had to put cursive on one side and manuscript on the other for those who could not read the cursive writing. And then finally, just maybe 6 years ago, they dropped it. Do you know what the part of their rationale was? These children nowadays will be doing everything on a computer, so they don't need to read cursive. And they bought it hook, line, and sinker. Now, the ones who are really, like my little grandchildren, they say, Grandma, please teach us how to write in cursive. So it's kind of...
There's a demarcation here. Because people don't understand. Everybody who... You better believe. All of the politicians' children can read cursive and write in cursive.
Right.
Because
yep.
understanding and writing in cursive, how can you sign checks? Even though things are going into the digital age, people are like, oh, you don't need that. If you're doing research at any college, the language, all the books, the early writings were in cursive. You would not be able to do any research. You would not be at the table where they're making the decisions. Because at some point, you're going to have to sign. Everything is not going to be DocuSign. There's something you're going to have to sign. And you can, it's just like when people couldn't spell.
They made their mark.
They make an X. So
well,
you're going to be.
They're doing that again. They're saying whatever. But that was my argument. Well, what happens when you have to sign something? They said your signature is whatever you say it is. So So you could put a chicken scratch and say, that's my name, and they would record that as your signature. It's kind of subversive and maniacal. It really is.
Oh, it is. Because it's a demarcation. What it is, it's setting up a strata of people. The people at the bottom would not be able to read. They would not be able to read cursive. They would not be able to write in cursive. The people at the top making the decisions will always be able to read, will always be able to understand cursive. They will always be able to write in cursive because that's the language of the people who are going to control. So if people mm-hmm. buy this okey-doke, well, it's okay, just watch. Just watch.
Yeah.
When you have contracts and all that in front of people, they are not using DocuSign. When you go to a
right.
closing for a house or something, they're not using DocuSign. If you any legal entity, they're not using DocuSign. You have to sign it and you have to read it. There's no house that you can buy. There's no legal no lease. There's nothing you can go into that they don't tell you to read it and sign it.
Well,
there's nothing.
Well,
so what Mary Wilson did.
I don't want to take up all your time. Is there anybody else on the board? I don't want to. You have 5 minutes.
Yeah. No one has said that he or she would like to speak. Yeah. So let me just see. If anyone else. Okay. Someone just clicked. If anyone else would like to join us, please join us in 5 minutes because we will be off. Okay. And join us next week. Greetings, Dee. How are you?
I am fine. Thank you. One of the things I want to say about reading, what I usually tell young mothers when they say, my child don't like to read, I say, do he like basketball, football, or whatever? And they say, yes. I said, get him a book on Michael Jordan or whoever and tell him mm-hmm. until they can talk to you about this book, you're not buying any garments or anything like that if that's what you do.
That's
and what I'm finding... What I'm finding out from some of these mothers is that their kids are beginning to read other things and they're enjoying reading.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think that's
excellent. And then the other thing is people don't remember Flip Wilson.
Oh, I do.
He used to play
mm-hmm.
Geraldine.
Mm-hmm.
He, if you notice, you never see his stuff on television. He always owned all of his product.
Mm.
He was a shrewd businessman.
Yeah, I
know
that about
him. The only way anything goes out is if his family releases it to go out and get paid for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was a shrewd businessman. I remember that about Flip Wilson. I read that about him. Yeah. He learned earlier. Same thing with Prince. It's same thing with the King family, too. They've trademarked the name. You can't just put things out about the King family without going through the foundation because they own the name. They've trademarked the name. So in the remaining 2 minutes, I would like to thank everyone for joining us this week. And we're on every Monday. And so please join us the following Monday. I am not sure of the topic because I had a topic for this week and like the transitions came in and I switched it. So I'm very flexible, like I said, because I own my own show. I can do that. So just know this is going to be very, very informative and you may or may not hear it somewhere else. I'm not egotistical enough to say that you won't hear this information somewhere else, but you can join in on the conversation. And some places, when you hear it in other places, you're not able to join in and participate in the discussion, and here you can. So know that you're loved more than you can ever imagine, and enjoy the rest of your week, and we will see you next Monday. Thank you, Dee and Alice, and everyone else who joined us. Namaste. Be safe. Take care.
I release all disappointment from my mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional body. 'Cause I know that spirit guides me, and love lives inside me. why